I'm Earlonne Woods.
I'm Nigel Poor. We're the hosts and creators of Ear Hustle from PRX's Radiotopia.
Ear Hustle is a show about life inside prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast.
In this next season, we've got stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells.
About residents in a women's prison who say they want to stay there.
And the most beautiful prison garden. Earlonne, I will never forget it.
Ear Hustle. Stories about life on the inside, told by those who live it.
Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts.
Support comes from Grady Health Foundation, presenting Move for Grady Saturday, April 27th, featuring a family-friendly bike ride through Atlanta's in-town neighborhoods. There's a ride, run, or walk distance for everyone, benefiting Grady Health System. More at moveforgrady.com.
It's another day, an opportunity to share political breakfast with you. I want to say a special welcome from WABE. It's always great to have you here sitting with us and listening. I'm Lisa Ram with Democratic strategist Darren Johnson and Republican strategist Brian Robinson. Hope you are both well today.
Doing great.
Doing great, Lisa. Thank you.
Listen, Stacey Abrams, you guys, making headlines again, at least in San Antonio, Texas. That's where you all know she kicked off her national speaking tour. And it's billed as a series of what candid conversations, right, about politics, leadership and social justice. But I think the messaging, and I think a lot of people think the messaging is setting the stage for her run for Georgia governor, don't you think?
Well, Lisa, I would tell you this. I think we got to start listening to what Stacey Abrams is telling us. I mean, we got to believe what she says. And she has told us previously that she hasn't made her mind up yet. About what she wants to do as far as running for governor, but she has said that she wants to be president of the United States of America. And so I'm one that actually is getting to the point where I think that, again, believing what she's telling us, I think she's really strongly contemplating whether or not she should run for governor. And if she decided to run for governor, does that still allow her an opportunity to run for president? Or if she doesn't run for governor, will she run for president in 2024 or will she run for president in 2028? So I believe what we saw in this speech recently was a woman who is still exploring her options. And the fact that she's in Texas having these conversations, which she's announced that she's going on this tour, leads me to believe that I think she's leaning more towards president.
Yeah, it's interesting that there are 12 stops on the tour, but not one in Georgia. So I guess that may throw that theory off a bit that she will announce soon that she's running for governor.
Here's the thing about it, though, is she's got to have a platform to run for president. And the platform is the governor's mansion. That is the pathway. Now, yes, Donald Trump wasn't an office holder and he made it to the White House, but that was an anomaly. He was somebody who had 20 to 30 years of celebrity status, 100% name ID. Granted, she's got really, really high name ID for somebody who's not in office and not on television all the time as a TV star, even though she is on television all the time in other capacities. She's got to have a platform. Right now, her political experience, whatever her talents, whatever her celebrity, her political experience is being a state House member, one of 180 members of the state House. Now, granted, she was the Democrat leader, but that is not the things of which presidents are made of. I think she's got to pass the test of winning a governor's race in Georgia in order to pass muster, even with Democratic voters, who obviously many of them love her. But here's one issue that she's going to run into at this juncture running for governor of Georgia, is that sometimes people who become celebrities begin to get a little pushback in their own states. They begin to get some pushback at home. And I think we may begin to see some of that. There's some annoyance at how much attention she gets. I hear it from other Democrats about how she is this anointed one. People feel frozen in place. Nobody can run for another office because everybody's got to wait to see what Stacey's going to do. So she's going to have some internal dynamics to play out. But I think if she's going to run for president, and she said this week or last that she is, like it came up, somebody asked her about it, and she said she was going to run at some juncture. I personally believe she's got to be Georgia governor first.
In terms of a platform, if folks are looking for a platform, I understand she spent a lot of time talking about her philosophy behind her organizing, you know, her efforts to boost voter turnout here in Georgia. Is that her platform, and should that be?
Yeah, I think Brian is definitely being disingenuous when he makes the inference that a woman who is a national star in a Democratic Party doesn't have a platform. I mean, that's a very, I believe, Republican talking point, sort of sexist way of disqualifying a woman who was this close to making history and becoming the first African-American woman governor in any of these United States of America. I mean, when you look at the issues.
It has nothing to do with being a woman, though. It has nothing to do with being a woman.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, you defend Lathan Sadler when I say he didn't have any experience, and then you rattled off all these things about
he's not
him being
for president.
A Navy SEAL. Well, but he's running. But the thing is, you're running for office, right? And Donald Trump has zero political experience, I remind you, Brian.
I said that too.
Yeah. So, but my point is, I don't think she has to be a governor in order to make a decision to run for president. I think what is interesting, Lisa, is that if you're Stacey Abrams and you spend in so much time and work changing this state of Georgia, making it possible for Democrats to win again after being out in the cold for 20 years and getting, you know, booked on a book tour and being asked to speak at all these different events that she's been asked to speak at. I just think that, you know, look, let's just call it what it is. If Brian is right that she feels that she has to be governor first before running for president, then I think Brian maybe has some polling or something where he feels like they want Stacey Abrams for whatever reason. But I believe that if you're Stacey Abrams right now, you really want to run for president, whether it's in 2024 or 2028 or maybe in 2032, then you look at what our president, Joe Biden, proved to us, and that is that you can be strong in Iowa, you can do well in New Hampshire, but South Carolina is where you really win a Democratic primary. And you know, and Congressman Clyburn definitely deserves a lot of credit for basically sealing the deal for President Joe Biden. But I think Stacey Abrams feels that she's making enough money. She has a national platform and a national name where she can go out here and continue to make sure that voting rights is at the top of the list in each state. She's fighting for Medicaid expansion. She's a fighter in for Hope Scholarship and education. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. But I do believe that Democrats have better have a second or third option if she decides not to run for governor this year or next year.
Anybody can run for president. I just don't think that you pass the test unless you have earned some office that is of stature. And granted, Trump is an obvious exception to that rule. She is a celebrity. That's what she is now. She's not a legislator anymore. She is a celebrity. And that is some platform. But I don't think voters are going to accept that if she just runs for president. And basically all she's done for the last few years is talk about registering people to vote and voter suppression. That I don't think that's a platform for running for president either.
Well, the perfect person to bring into this conversation is our special guest today. No stranger to Atlanta politics, Georgia politics, or even national politics is Andrew Young, former Atlanta mayor for two terms, former ambassador to the UN under President Jimmy Carter, and very instrumental in promoting the city internationally and winning the bid for the 1996 Olympic Games. And I have to say, a really good friend to WABE, because he's always available when we need to talk about some of these controversial topics. Ambassador Young, thank you for visiting us today. Always an honor.
Well, my pleasure.
What are your thoughts about Stacey Abrams and if she's setting the stage for running for governor or even president at this point?
Well, I think the issue right now for Stacey and for all of us is getting the voting rights issue straight nationally. And I don't think you can run for anything. I'm not even sure you should. It's worth your time running for a statewide office in Georgia under the present situation. And I think until some things are resolved in Washington or the Supreme Court, I think Stacey ought to do what she's doing. She's doing it well. She's an author. She's a lecturer. She's a brilliant representative. She visited every single county in Georgia, so she doesn't have a name recognition problem in Georgia. But she does have a problem with the state legislature and with the existing voting laws. And I don't know whether I would run for anything under these kinds of conditions statewide.
I don't really understand the where you're coming from, because we just had an election in January that Raphael Warnock won, that John Ossoff won. What are the conditions that would prevent her from winning here?
That state bill has a lot of questions in it that are now being contested in at various levels in the courts. And I think that well, one, it's not time. I think that she has to make up her own mind. It's not my business. And I'm much more interested right now in what happens in the city. Because the thing is, if Atlanta's not working, Georgia is not working. And the Atlanta economy is almost a $400 billion economy. In 2019, we were $399 billion. That puts us almost on the same level as Norway.
Really?
That's Atlanta.
That's amazing.
That's right. Atlanta and Georgia is another $1.5 to $2 billion. But if Atlanta is not working, Georgia is not working. And we have done very well together. I got along with every governor we've had, including Lester Maddox, and especially Lester Maddox, mainly because I got along with the speaker. And we knew each other's turf. And there were some things that I could do for the state that they couldn't have done without me. And whenever I went abroad to try to bring business into the state, the governor usually went with me, or I went with him. During the 8 years I was mayor, we brought $70 billion of foreign direct investment into the state. And that's what got Georgia going. If Atlanta is not working well, and if you don't have people of vision and experience running Atlanta, Georgia's not going to do well. So I think we need to focus on Atlanta and make sure we get Atlanta going right. That's a couple of months away. And I say that it's not easy being mayor of Atlanta. When I became mayor of Atlanta, when I decided to run for mayor of Atlanta, which I didn't want to do, I ran because I figured if we didn't have somebody with some international experience, the whole state was going to go down. And so economically. And so it was because I had been with Martin Luther King for 10 years all over the world. And I had been in the Congress for 4 years on the banking committee. And I'd been at the UN for 3 years. And it was still hard for me to run Atlanta. And I also had a staff of people who had worked with Maynard Jackson, but there was a staff of people, there was a civil service in Atlanta that had gone all the way back to, some of them, to Mayor Hartsfield. And so we had an experienced infrastructure, which I'm not sure exists to the same way now. And so the thing that we need in Atlanta is somebody that knows what a city is supposed to do, knows how to relate to the state legislature, understand what's going on in the world. You're representing the Republican side, but the truth of it is, we don't have a two-party system in Georgia. Everybody's back and forth. I mean, I came here voting Republican. And my first voter registration drive in 1956 down in Thomasville, Georgia, I was instructed by Maynard Jackson's grandfather to get all my people to vote Republican for Eisenhower. And so we've seen various kinds of shifts, but what's most important about Georgia's success is that we get along. And even though we're different parties, we've been able to work together.
You know,
and I think that's more critical now.
Speaking of you in Thomasville in 1956, that's really interesting. I did not know that you had done some work down there. You know, it was at a country club at a golf course.
I was pastor of two little churches.
In Thomasville, really?
That are still going. I was there for 3 years, 4 years, and both of my first two children were born at Archibald Memorial Hospital.
All right.
And it was one of the best hospitals in the South.
Well, the local lore is that Eisenhower was golfing in Thomasville when he decided to run for re-election in 1956. So it's an interesting little side note there.
Well, he was already running, I thought, but his secretary of treasurer, Humphreys, had a plantation down there, and he used to come down both to play golf and to shoot quail. But because he was coming to Thomasville, it meant that Thomasville had to be on good behavior. And I had 4 wonderful years there without an incident.
So it's so good to see you and thank you for being with us. And please give Carolyn my best. Tell her I say hello, and Andre as well.
Okay.
I want to ask you a question about something you mentioned earlier, and that is the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act, which is H.R. 4. You know, you're someone who was on the front lines with so many individuals, men and women who fought for voting rights back in 1965. I'm always so inspired and intrigued by your wisdom, and you've been a mentor to me for so many decades. But if you can just tell our listeners the importance of making sure that Congress passes H.R. 4, and what do you think the impacts from the passage of this bill will be on American, and particularly around our democracy and voting?
We've had a rocky history with voting rights. And the 1965 Civil Rights Act, which is really basically what the John Lewis Voting Rights Act is now, that was passed, that was renewed under President Bush, the younger, and I think there was something like 97 votes for it. It was unanimous. Now, all of a sudden, that bill that was unanimously, it wasn't unanimously passed in 65, but it was almost unanimously renewed in President Bush's term, is now very, very controversial. And I think people are making a mistake. I don't think that there is I think that people really need the right to vote, and that you're not going to get anywhere by making it difficult for them to vote. But every time somebody tries, it backfires. In 1970, when they reapportioned the district for Congress, I live in Cascade, inside the perimeter, but they reapportioned me and put me in a district with Noonan. And we had to go to court and have the court straighten that out, which they did, and they drew a district which, I don't think it was but 38% black, but that still gave me a chance to win a congressional race. And I think that those kinds of details that are just very complicated in the state bill And I understand that the state bill didn't arrive till 8 days before it was passed. And it's probably not anybody in the state that had a chance to read it all. So we still have a lot of questions, but those don't affect the city so far. But there is a section that would give the somebody, the legislature, an opportunity to condemn an entire county board of electors. That could be very difficult and is probably unconstitutional. But again, all of those are questions that I think we need to avoid, because politics is not, politics is not about politics. It's about the money that you can generate in a state. And I mean, we've worked the international economy very well, and there's always a dialogue going on, because Georgia is a good place to do business. But it's only a good place to do business as long as it has reasonable politics. And if the politics ever gets unreasonable and it makes it difficult to do business, then everybody's going to hurt. And it's not Democrat or Republican. But Atlanta Airport, and we had 110 million passengers in 2019, and we were probably down to 30 million passengers last year. Well, that means all of our hotels are 30% full. You know, it means that everything is upset. And that's why we need someone with experience to reestablish order.
Ambassador Young, can I jump in here and talk about crime in terms of politics that you're referring to there? Let's take back 25 years. It's been 25 years since the Olympic Games, and Atlanta is a much different city than it was 25 years ago. Do you sit back and think of how it would have been a much tougher sell given the crime issue we're dealing with today?
Well, you have to relate the crime issue to the fact that the economy is operating at 1/3 or 1/4 capacity. People are not working. The hotels are not operating. The schools are closed. When I was elected in 1981, we were the murder capital of the world. And the first thing I had to deal with was crime. And we didn't get emotional about it. We realized that crime comes from money and the need of it. And we found that the money was coming from Chicago, Detroit, and Miami, fighting over who was going to control the drugs here. And so it was with the FBI and the GBI and the city police force pulling together that did a lot of things. But we also had the business community create 6,000 summer jobs. Just to get a lot of high school kids off the streets. And the Action Forum in those days, and the CEOs of the 20 major companies picked up the phone themselves and called their suppliers and said, "I need you to take 4 summer interns." Well, they're not going to tell him no. And they created over 6,000 jobs in less than 10 days. They also decided that they were going to invest in summer youth programs in the playgrounds. And we hooked that up with the Police Athletic League. So we did a good job of crime prevention, but we also did a good job of crime analysis and crime and relationship between police and community. We had introduced, before I got here, the whole concept of community policing. So every neighborhood had to meet with its precinct, or every precinct, police precinct, met with its neighborhood once a month. And the neighborhood told the police how to protect them. It's the most exciting job I ever had.
But Ambassador Young, you did say being mayor is not an easy feat. And an AJC poll suggests that voters strongly approve of Mayor Bottoms as a person and, you know, believe overall she's done a good job. But she struggles in the area of crime and traffic congestion and affordable housing. In terms of crime,
the nation is struggling in the area of crime.
The nation?
Yeah. I mean, there's not an Atlanta crime problem. There's a national crime problem. There's an economy that's functioning at less than 50% its capacity. There are school kids that are not in school. The whole society has been wrecked by this virus. And it's really a mistake to try to blame it on any one person or to think that there's any one person in existence that by themselves can resolve it. And I think that the mayor's primarily a mother, and she has four adopted children that I think when the problems began to pop up in her family's life, and both she and her husband had the virus. So they experienced this thing, you know, full course. Now, and I think she decided that she had paid her dues and that she didn't want to keep on doing it. And that's certainly, I admire her for that. But I think she did a very good job of holding us together and keeping the city going. I mean, nothing has really changed. And a new mayor who knows what's going on in the city and knows how the city operates. But let's just take my problem for yesterday. Nobody picked up my garbage. Well, there are two groups. One group did, one group didn't. That said to me, now when I was mayor, we had a hard time keeping people on garbage details. And people collect garbage because of a sense of loyalty and job responsibility, but their pay is very limited. And so keeping the garbage off the streets and picking it up regularly is a major issue. Now, the way I did it was I got out there and I showed up at the garbage station one morning at 6 o'clock and said, put me on a truck. and I collected garbage, you know, and it was a corny trick to give some respect to the sanitation workers. But I'd also been to jail for sanitation workers. So I could mobilize them a little bit and get things together and show that we would find ways to make improvements in their jobs that would show them some respect. And then we got the garbage collection on time again. But when the guy who was in charge of the sanitation department took early retirement, it really was hard for us to find somebody that could gain the respect of 300 or 400 people on whom the city dependent. And so I'm just saying that this is not a simple task, and there's not going to be a simple solution.
So Buckhead becoming its own city is not one solution here.
Well, it's not a solution for Buckhead either.
A solution or the solution.
And I think that the people, I understand that the people who are pushing that have only been in town 2 years. It's good news coverage and it's something to discuss, but it's not a serious solution. In fact, it exacerbates most of our problems. I mean, it messes with the school system, I found out yesterday in the press. You mess with the school system in Buckhead, and you destroy the school system in Atlanta. And what does that mean for crime? It means you got 1,000 more young, energetic, irresponsible people that are not organized in any significant way to be a positive influence in the city.
And you know that all too well. And we have the mayoral election just weeks away. And it's always a privilege and an honor to speak with you, Ambassador Andrew Young. Thank you so much for stopping by Political Breakfast. We appreciate you.
Thanks for inviting me.
Good to have you, Ambassador.
And you don't have to agree with me. That's the thing about it.
I'm coming by the house soon. I'll be by the house really soon.
We'll be right back with more Political Breakfast after this.
You love free, and at Ameris Bank, so do we. That's why we're proud to offer worry-free, hassle-free Ameris Bank free checking. Manage your money your way with convenient access to digital, mobile, and telephone banking, all with no monthly service fee or minimum balance requirements. At Ameris Bank, we're with you. For more information or to open an account, visit our local bankers in person or online at amerisbank.com/free checking. Other fees such as overdraft fees may apply. Ameris Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Support for WABE's local coverage on maternal health and mortality comes from Georgia Health Initiative, whose mission is to inspire and promote collective action that advances health equity for all Georgians. Learn more at georgiahealthinitiative.org.
Welcome back to Political Breakfast. Before we return to the conversation, I want to tell you about our new podcast, The Brief from WABE. Don't have a lot of time to follow Metro Atlanta news? That's okay. Every weekday evening, WABE's award-winning reporters bring you up to speed with news stories and short interviews. And each episode is only 10 minutes. And on Saturdays, enjoy a deeper dive with WABE's Week in Review. That's The Brief from WABE. Listen for free wherever you get your podcasts. We're back now with political strategist Brian Robinson and Theron Johnson. Our special guest today, former Ambassador Andrew Young. And one of the major takeaways, I think, from our conversation is that he pinpointed that the fact that the crime problem is not just an Atlanta problem. It is a national issue that is trickling down to Atlanta. So we're not alone in this.
Yeah, I thought what was interesting, Lisa, is that, you know, I had the opportunity this week to spend some time with some former police chiefs. And I totally agree with Ambassador Young that crime is just not an Atlanta issue. It's happening all over the United States of America. And unfortunately, where Mayor Bottoms says that, right, her critics criticize her for it because
sure,
they feel like she's
sure.
trying to punt. Yeah, but exactly. I will hope that our listeners understand someone who's an international world figure like Ambassador Young, who really had the courage to come on and say, look, it's not just an Atlanta crime problem. It's a crime problem all across the country. I mean, you look at cities like Chicago, who had, I think, roughly 95 murders in one weekend, right? 95 shootings in one weekend. And, you know, places like Memphis and other cities. But other big takeaway from this conversation, while I respectfully disagree with some of the things that Ambassador Young said, particularly around the city of Atlanta, I do respect his commitment to the city that he loves. I mean, he reminded us that he came in at a time where international investment and economic prosperity was at the top of his list.
Well, you know, I have immense respect for Andrew Young, and I he's a national treasure. And what the audience can't see that we could see, you know, we're here on the video screen, is, you know, he's got behind him pictures of him and Jimmy Carter, pictures of MLK, who he referred to as Martin, because he was just a friend to Andrew Young, right? Not the icon that
that's
he is
the
to
wow
the rest
factor
of us.
There for sure.
Yeah, and pictures of Barack Obama. So this is somebody who has international stature, someone who did bring the Olympics here. And when I see this guy on national TV, what always strikes me is here he is. He's this, you know, this Democratic icon, this Atlanta icon. But when he's talking about nationalists, he's actually very moderate. He does not necessarily fit into the left wing pool of the party, of his party today. But we didn't really hear that moderation today. We heard about the John Lewis Voting Rights Act. I disagree with him on that. My thing is, Georgia cannot be put under an old Voting Rights Act formula where the federal government decides if we can. How we can draw lines and can determine yes or no on any election issue that we have in Georgia. The federal government should not be having that kind of control over Georgia if it doesn't have it over other states, unless Georgia is different than other states, and we're not. We have high levels of minority participation. And despite what he was saying about, I wouldn't run under this law because we don't know how it's going to work out, we do know how it's going to work out. There's going to be record high minority turnout in 2022, I promise.
The other thing, Lisa, that Ambassador Young refused to sort of answer, and I sort of did too, is, you know, trying to making sure that we don't allow Brian and others to force Stacey Abrams to make a decision about her future. If you really notice, he was very careful about what she should do. And I think he articulated, like, look, she is out there fighting for us every single day. And I think he was right when we really need her right now, not just in Georgia, but around the country, raising the money to push back on these Republican legislators, many of whom who lost under the rules that they created, who are now whining about the election outcome, to make sure that we have someone that can raise the money, raise the awareness, and quite frankly, articulate a message that pushes back on what Brian and other Republicans are saying also across the country. So I do agree with Ambassador Young on that statement.
You know, I'm not trying to push Stacey Abrams into it. I'm just looking at it kind of as an analyst. And I think at some juncture, you guys, Theron and the Democrat Party, Ambassador Young among them, are going to get frustrated if all of the Democratic talent in the state, and there's a lot more today. Y'all's bench is much bigger than it was 10 years ago. It's a significant difference. I think we can agree on that. But a lot of that talent's being kept on the sidelines, having to wait on what Stacey Abrams is going to do. And if she does decide she's not going to run and she's just going to run for president without running for governor, the Democratic Party of Georgia is going to have chaos. The floodgates are going to open because that pent-up demand is there.
Brian Robinson is a Republican strategist, communications consultant, and former deputy chief of staff of Governor Nathan Deal. Theron Johnson is a Democratic strategist, public affairs and government consultant, and most recently a senior advisor to the Biden Georgia campaign. That's it for this week's Political Breakfast. I want to thank you so much for joining us. I'm Lisa Raham. Thank you both for being here.
Thanks, Lisa.
Thank you, Lisa.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
The Gold Dome Scramble podcast is now Plugged In, a WAB politics podcast. New name, same in-depth, on-the-ground reporting from us, WAB politics reporters Sam Greenglass and Raul Bally. We'll cover local, state, and national politics as we go beyond the headlines with journalists, voters, and politicians. New episodes drop Fridays starting April 26th. Listen and subscribe at WAB.org or your favorite podcast platform.